It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions
18+. Hey, nerds. Welcome to episode 459 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. Just Adam today. Today's interview is a conversation I had with Kaylin Bayron, who is a debut author. Her book comes out tomorrow, if you're listening to this Monday, July 6th. It's called Cinderella is Dead. It's a really, really fascinating and interesting kind of dark reimagining of Cinderella, although that's not even really true. It's more like an extension of the story. It's set 200 years after the fairy tale of Cinderella as we know it, but it's also within the world where Cinderella is a story that is very important to everything that happens. So we get into a long conversation of, you know, why we think dark fairy tales are so fascinating and why people are, you know, reimagining them a lot now and how fun they are. We also talk about being the child of a military family and how that affected her life and her writing. And it was just a really, really fun conversation. We also got into a bunch of Broadway talk, of course, talked Hamilton because we did this interview on Thursday. So it was right before Hamilton came out this weekend, and everyone kind of, you know, spent their weekend, I assume, watching Hamilton as frequently as I did. A lot of fun. She was just a blast to talk to. She had a really like unique upbringing. She's been all over the country, lived in Alaska. And so it was a good conversation. She's a really fun person. It was really great to meet her. I think you guys are very much going to enjoy it. If you want to get a hold of us, you can always go to professionalbooknerds.com. There you can obviously subscribe to the podcast, but you can also find our email, professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com. You can also find, if you scroll down a little bit on our website, there is a bunch of different photos and put up two really cool bingo cards that Jill made. You know, a lot of people are doing like the Instagram and Twitter bingo things lately. She made one with anti-racism reads that we put together a list for, and then also one for just diverse reading lists. So we've seen a couple people, you know, a bunch of people actually use those over the past weekend. And it's been really cool to see people say, you know, they've got work to do, and they're going to be finding some additional diverse authors for themselves, you know, BIPOC and Black voices to increase their reading. So take a look at those if you're on professionalbooknerds.com. There's a lot of good information on those. Also, if you are relatively new to the podcast, you can just use the search bar at the top of our website and see who we've interviewed. If you search for a book or an author or even a genre, all the episodes that feature those people will come up. So I realize we don't really talk about how to use our website very often, but it's pretty cool. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. And I think that's just about all the housekeeping. If you want a Professional Book Nerds t-shirt or any Libby or Sora stuff from Overdrive, you can go to shop.overdrive.com. We've got a couple cool Professional Book Nerds t-shirts there. And if you buy anything, feel free to tag us. But anything that you do purchase, 100% of the profits are going to go to a library charity. So you can do some good. I think that's just about everything. I'm not going to keep you any longer. I really, really had a lot of fun with this conversation, so I hope you guys do as well. And I hope you enjoy this interview with Kaylin Bayron, author of Cinderella is Dead, on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. Hi, everybody. This is Adam, and I'm super, super excited today to tell you that I am joined by Kaylin Bayron, who is the debut author of Cinderella is Dead, which is just a incredibly fun and fantastic retelling, reimagining, as you could probably imagine, of Cinderella, which is right in the title right there. It's good SEO branding. She is both an author and a classically trained vocalist. She grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, which I'm going to ask about. And just the book is so, so fantastic. We're going to get all up into it. So first off, Kaylin, thank you for joining me today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So as I told you before we kind of started recording, we always love having our authors
sort of kick off our conversation by introducing our listeners to the book. So do you want to kind of introduce Cinderella is Dead to everybody?
Sure. So Cinderella is Dead is a YA fantasy, and it is the story of 16-year-old Sophia Grimmins, and she is a young girl living in the kingdom of Marseille, and this is the place where Cinderella lived and died 200 years before. Cinderella's story has kind of become the backbone of this society, and young women are expected to kind of follow in her footsteps. They have to attend a ball every year that's now mandatory. And it's a three strikes and you're out kind of thing. You have to find a suitor by your third year or you become a forfeit. And so my main character, Sophia, is preparing to go to her first ball, but she is in love with her best friend, Aaron. And she doesn't want any parts of what's going on. So when she gets to the ball, that's kind of a big turning point for her. And she makes some decisions that put her on a collision course with Marseille's ruler, and she uncovers some really earth-shattering secrets about the king, about Cinderella, about the fairy godmother, and just the society as a whole that she lives in. So it's really a story about kind of raising your voice and telling the whole truth when it comes to our histories. And it's also about telling queer Black girls that they are enough just as they are.
What I really love is I am also very much a fairy tale retelling and especially dark fairy tale retelling person. I'm like very much in that court with you, but I love what you did where it's not, I don't even want to say it's a retelling. It's not.
Right.
It's an extension sort of a thing. So what made you want to take this, obviously, you know, maybe even the best known fairy tale, I would argue, mm-hmm. like, and turn it on its head like this? What made you want to create that story structure?
Yeah, so Cinderella is super visible, right? Like, that's Cinderella's castle at Disney, what is it, Disney World, Disneyland? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never been to either, so I don't know. But I just know that that's, like, even as somebody who's never been there, I know that's her castle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of, like, hyper-visible. And that's the reason I chose it, is because it's kind of instantly recognizable. But I wanted to do it in a way that kind of opened the story up to people that maybe it, you know, it wasn't accessible to before. There are no Black folks in mm-hmm. Cinderella. There are no queer folks in Cinderella. Now, there have been other kind of retellings, reimaginings. There was, you know, the version with Brandy that was on TV, and Whitney Houston was the fairy godmother. So yeah, we're doing like a watch party for that later. Amazing. Next week. So, but yeah, but so, you know, there are those kinds of things, but I really, you know, I wanted to approach it from the angle of, so Wicked happens to be my favorite retelling. Mm-hmm. And because it kind of shifts the focus from Dorothy to the Wicked Witch, that's kind of what I wanted to do here. I wanted to focus on these villainous women that this story kind of uses as a prop. And that was kind of where I started thinking about the retelling. I wanted to do it from a completely different angle. And so it's more about kind of making this world accessible to people like me who didn't really have, like, I didn't see myself reflected in fairy tales as a kid. I am 36. And so, you know, kind of coming up in the late 80s and the 90s, it's like I didn't have a princess, a Disney princess that looked like me. Princess Tiana, Princess and the Frog, that didn't come out till I was almost 30. Like, that was, you know, just, so I didn't have that. So I wanted that too. So it's kind of a combination of all those different factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the same, so we are right about the same age. And laughing when you mentioned the Brandy Cinderella, because not only do I remember that vividly, but then my high school, I went to a really small high school. So like, even if you were an athlete, you could also be in the drama club and things like that. We did Cinderella my senior year. We would always do a musical and a play, and we did Cinderella, but we did the music from the one with Brandy as opposed to like the traditional, like, we had a really
okay.
cool, we had a really cool drama producer who was like, we're going to do
Cinderella, and everyone like kind of groaned, and she's like, no, 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 we're gonna do like the one that was just on television, Brandy and Jason Alexander.
Oh yeah, that's fabulous. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that having an origin story that people are so familiar with really lets you play with like storytelling structure and the way, because you, when this isn't a spoiler, like when you start, the story starts off very much like in the middle of, I don't even want to call it a romance, but like it starts in the middle of action, and like it's a world that is brand new but understood. Like, do you think having that origin story was freeing, or was it restricting in some aspects?
You know, I have found that, you know, in the retellings that I love, I like to see those kind of markers that show me, you know, parts of the original tale. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wanted to kind of start this story right in the middle, you know, right in the middle of something to kind of illustrate how, you know, the kind of the detrimental effect that the Cinderella story that we all know that is still intact within Cinderella is Dead. It's, you know, it's there as this kind of very, it's like a sacred text almost to this society. So it still exists there. And I wanted to show just right out of the gate how hard the effects of that story, how hard it is to kind of navigate that when you're not the target audience, when you're not, when you don't fit nicely into this box that society has kind of created for you. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's a little of both. I get to kind of play with the origin story and rethink how it, you know, how it goes. But I also want, like, my goal is to kind of have people go back and look at the Cinderella story and be like, oh, like, I don't ever want you to look at the story the same way again. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's what happened to me with Wicked. It's like, now I can't kind of look at Wizard of Oz the same way anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's the effect I was going for.
Yeah, Gregory Maguire, he actually, did you ever read, this is apropos, not part of our conversation, but did you ever read his Nutcracker book? I'm trying to think, actually, it's like somewhere behind me. Somewhere down here. It's called Hide and See or Hidden See. And it's same thing. He did the same thing with like he took the story of the Nutcracker, like the mouse king and or whatever, the rat king, whatever. It's like that traditional ballet production of the Nutcracker, and he basically produced the same thing, like a background story of how that Nutcracker can, it's very, he's
I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Especially during Christmas time, like a perfect Christmas tea read. Okay, so back to the actual conversation. This will happen a lot. I get sidetracked. I love you. You do highlight in the book all of the less than great aspects of like all that matters is getting the prince type of a thing. I'm throwing up air quotes here in the society. But I mean, to devote like so much of your time and care to this story, like I had to imagine there's aspects of this and other fairy tales that you do find joy in, right? I don't think like a masochist becomes a writing story.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's this whole conversation around, you know, kids wanting to be princesses, and is that like the only choice? Then that's blah, blah, blah. But I love princess stories. I love, you know, I think, you know, as a kid that I really, you know, I wanted to be a princess. And I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And wanting to kind of see yourself as a princess, I think that's fun. I think that's great. And so for me, there is a lot of nostalgia kind of connected with, you know, Disney princesses. And I'm also, you know, I also studied music. So I love, you know, I love the songs and I love, you know, all of those different parts of it. So there's still a lot of joy connected to this story for me. But I think it's kind of hand in hand with my just kind of wanting to see myself reflected there. Like, oh, I love this story so much. Why can't, you know, where's the person that looks like me? Or where's the person that, you know, feels like I feel? So it's kind of the nostalgia and then also the, you know, wanting better kind of representation. Those two things I think are just linked for me with this story.
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, you mentioned the nostalgia, like that hits me right in the heart too. This morning I started my day with having a conversation with a coworker on Slack, and they sent me Disney posted like the parks, same thing. I've been to the parks, but it's been a million years, but they posted at the end of every night, they do this like insane fireworks thing and on Cinderella's castle, and they do the like 3D visual projections on the castle so that I can tell stories like visually. I'm doing a lot of hand talking and people can't. Great. Yeah. But it's like right in the nostalgia, like she sent it to me and it was like 20 minutes long, and I like wasted 20 minutes of my morning watching a fireworks show because of all the songs.
Yeah.
These little characters pull up, and it's like the Disney-fied versions of all these fairy tales are what we were brought up on. But I mean, the actual ones are extremely dark, and getting to use those, like, does it feel freeing to be able to take a story that is very like there's obviously darkness to the Cinderella, even like the Disney one, but there's so much more darkness in the actual origin stories. Like, does it feel freeing when you're writing to be like, I can mess these people up, because that's sort of like canon is how these things work.
Yeah. I feel like those earlier versions really, really are, you know, some of them are really gruesome. And even mm-hmm. Cinderella with, you know, the stepsisters cutting off pieces of their feet to fit in the shoe. And there's, you know, and there's not, there are earlier versions where there is no fairy godmother. It's more just kind of a, you know, like a magical tree and birds mm-hmm. and things like that. And so, you know, I've kind of played with that a little bit too. But yeah, I think it's fun to kind of dig deeper. You know, I love a good hidden history. So it's kind of like all of those earlier versions contributed to what we know now. We just, you know, going back and kind of reading them, if you see the progression of how the story has evolved. And, but, you know, I think the story is just so important to a lot of people. So there's mm-hmm. also kind of a pushback sometimes, you know, Cinderella, we love Cinderella. Don't mess with that story. Don't, you know, don't do something else. And it's kind of, you know, I do get some pushback there, but I think it's important to be able to have, you know, lots of different choices and lots of different versions of things, and other people are doing it all the time. So I'm gonna do it too.
Yeah, well, and I think that's like, honestly, with a lot of conversations going on in our society right now about like, I think it's exactly what you said. It's there's so many people who like admittedly look like me, like white people who see a story like yours. It's called Cinderella is Dead. And there's this beautiful black person on the cover. First of all, the covers is, I know you have nothing to do with like the cover design final.
Yeah, I got a little bit of say. Bloomsbury came to me and asked me. They were like, "What do you want?" And I was like, "It's got to be Sophia. That's my main character on the cover, a brown-skinned black girl with her natural hair out." I was like, "Please, please give it to me." And they did. So I love them for that.
Yeah, and so like I know that there will be people who will see that, and I'm sure that in the little pockets of our country that, you know, have never had any diverse conversations or anything, where they'll see that and they'll be like, "That's not my Cinderella," and they'll get pissed about it. But like, the important thing is exactly what you said. It's like you writing this story and reimagining it so that you see yourself in it. And so maybe a young girl who is black or brown sees it as they're coming up and they realize like, I can be a part of this story. It doesn't make the original Cinderella any less than. There's room right. for every single version of these stories.
Right, right. And the, you know, the original, air quote, original story of Cinderella, I think most people are thinking about the Disney version, and that's not even the original story mm-hmm. either. So it's, you know, storytelling is fluid. It's ever changing. It's evolving, you know, all the time. It's constantly changing. And, you know, I think it does kind of speak to who is allowed to retell these stories, who is allowed to have access to changing mm-hmm. these stories. I think that's, you know, another kind of running commentary that's happening. But you know, it's important. It's important for representation. Also, you know, so I have this, you know, this black girl, but it's also a queer black girl. And so those mm-hmm. intersections of, you know, race and sexuality Those are really important too, because sometimes we get, you know, we'll get a black character, but they can only be one thing. Like, it's like,
yeah,
too many marginalizations. It's just like too much. But that's, you know, that's changing, and so I'm happy to be able to contribute something to that.
Mm-hmm. So I saw in your bio that you said you used to write a little bit of fan fiction and short stories. You described as hot garbage. Just the best.
Hot garbage.
Best description. Yes. but when you were writing those, like, were you ever doing fan fictions and like retellings of these types of stories, or did you sort of see over the past, I mean, it's been over the past like 5 years or so that retellings have really kind of taken off. Like, did you always think you wanted to do something like this, or was it because of the fact that there seems to be like a definite hunger for these stories?
You know, I think that, so like the first, I'm trying to think. So the first really like retelling that I ever read was the what's it called? The true story of the three little pigs.
Alfred Wolf. I got to interview that author, and it was like,
oh my God, yes.
I freaked out.
Oh my God, yes, that and the stinky cheese man and all it, like, yes.
Yeah, okay, John Cheshka, yeah.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah, yes. I told my mom, because she was a teacher, and like I grew up reading that like in her lap, and I was like, Mom, I'm interviewing the Stinky Cheese Man guy. Like, anyway, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I love it. And I read that, I think I got it at a book fair or something, like, it, you know, and I remember specifically reading that book and just being like, what is this? I love this. Like, I was obsessed with it. And so, oh my God, I totally got off track. Where did my brain go?
So after
So sorry.
No, you're good.
So my fan fiction, originally was just kind of like self insert fan fiction. You know, I just wanted to see more black people in Harry Potter. I just wanted to see, you know, and won't speak too much about that, but
you can, we've kind of dunked on her a little bit.
The only thing I want to say, you know, that I think matters is that I love and support my trans fam, and that's it. Like, it's ride or die with them, and I don't care about anything else. That's all that matters to me. Absolutely. So that's all I'm gonna say about. But yeah, anyways, but my fan fiction definitely, you know, was more just like, I want to see more people who look like me and my family and my friends and our, you know, the different, you know, all different kinds of people. And so that was what my fan fiction about. And it was never really meant to be like, I never really thought that I wasn't publishing it anywhere or doing anything like you know, but then retellings, you know, there was that show, Once Upon a Time. Mm-hmm. And I watched, you know, several episodes of that, when it first came out, and I was just, you know, I was just like, this is something I could do that would kind of pull all of these threads of things that I love together. So it was more just like, you know, just kind of, it felt like a perfect storm of events. So it wasn't, I didn't really set out to say, you know, I'm going to write this retelling and it's, you know, that seems to be what's good right now, but, it worked out that way. And, I'm really glad that it did.
Yeah. I do feel like there's, like Jill and I, my co-host, we joke around all the time. There's another reading podcast called Reading Glasses, who we're like really close friends with, and they have this thing called wheelhouses, where like people will write in and be like, my wheelhouse is, you know, like badass female pirates or whatever, you know, whatever it is, and they just go through it. It's like that thing where if you tell me like a brief sentence about what a story is, I'm in. And like, and for mine, like lady pirates, absolutely. Fairy tale retellings, yes. And I feel like there's so many people that do see, like, there is that excitement, like you mentioned Wicked. And then there's all the, I think the Cinder Chronicles, or
yes,
like the Lunar Chronicles, like all those types of books. We had a couple authors last year, ironically, who both did Beauty and the Beast retellings last year, and it's like,
A Heart So Fierce and Broken, that's a Beauty and the Beast retelling. Yeah, those.
But there's an excitement to be like, okay, how are you going to take this story that I know so well and kind of turn on its ear or play with the structure. Like you said, even just something as simple as being like, how do those evil people get to be evil? Like, there's a reason Maleficent the movie is made like $1 billion. Like,
yes. I love that one too. Yeah. And I think it's also kind of interesting to look at, you know, people that we think of as villains and see that once you know the whole story, it's really not that they're villains. It's just that they've been like horribly mistreated and need, you know, and they are acting out. So it's not, you know, I think there's more of an understanding, you know, for those people. And because women get cast as the villains so often in these fairy tales, I think it's needed. And I think it's just a whole new, an expanding of, you know, this already established universe, but we can do so much, and it has the potential to do so much more. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. The only, returning to a world that I am not supportive of is the Hunger Games one, where like there's that prequel that came out with President Snow.
Nope. And we we don't need it.
Exactly. I was like, there's Hamish. There's like a million other characters that you could be like, tell me where they came from. I don't need you. Dude was horrible. I don't need you to tell me that he might have died at once. Like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. Yeah.
Oh man. Okay. So I can't not ask this. How does someone who was born in Kansas end up in Anchorage, Alaska?
Oh my God. The military. Like, okay. Yeah, my parents were military. My dad was military. Yeah, and Anchorage, I don't know like why Anchorage happened to be the place that we just stayed. But that's it's like, oh, we're here, so yeah, we're gonna stay. So, Anchorage is beautiful, and I, you know, that's my hometown, and I still have family there, and that's great. And but it's like a nice place to visit now. Okay. Yeah. So if you love skiing and outdoor stuff and aren't scared of moose, Anchorage is the place to be. So
moose are huge.
You know, it's so funny because people, okay, this is like not, but whatever. It's that's like right. people think that they're like horses. And no. I'm like, no, it's like two horses. It's like they're huge, and they're not scared of people, and they will stomp the yard on you if you come close to them. So they're scary.
I had a friend who went to college in Maine to play basketball, and I guess there's moose there, which I did not know. And he sent me a video, and I'll never forget it. He put like a salt lick or a sugar cube or something on his windowsill, and he's like, look at this. And it was a moose that came up and like ate it. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. And he was like, I'm on the second floor of this building. Like, I lost my mind. They are
so scary. Yeah. If you stop and think about that, it's so scary.
And they're fast. So where are you? Where are you at now? Like, are you?
San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oof, you just went like 180.
Yeah. So I met my partner in Anchorage, and then we started moving around because they're military too. Mm-hmm. So we went from Anchorage to Georgia. That was the first, and that was really the first time that I'd, you know, for an extended period of time. Well, I lived in Portland for like a while when I was a kid, but we went to Georgia, and then we got there in the middle of the summer. It was like 105 degrees. And I was like, we got to go back. We got to go back to Alaska. I can't do this. So it's, Texas is great. I like the weather. Yeah. Lots of good food. So yeah.
Georgia is at Fort Bragg?
Fort, I was going to say Carson, but that is Colorado. Fort Gordon. There we go.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. One of my, old roommates is, army lifer, and like he went to ROTC, and now he's, pretty high up actually. And like, same thing. Like he hasn't been to Anchorage yet, but like he's been in San Antonio. He's probably like following your path.
Yeah.
Do you think that actually along those lines, like, do you think that growing up in a military family has any impact on the way that you write stories?
You know, I think what the military has kind of afforded me and my family is just, you know, the experience of kind of moving around, of talking to different people, of seeing that no matter where I go, there are people who are like me who are looking for, you know, better representation. And, you know, I have kids. And so I meet a lot of other parents who are also looking for better stories for their kids. And mm-hmm. so I think what it's given me, the tie there, is just kind of, you know, getting to see that this is it's not just me who wants mm-hmm. these kinds of stories. It's kind of a wider, you know, it's a wider swath of people who just need better rep for themselves, for their kids. So that's what that's given me.
Mm-hmm. I also saw in your profile that you're a big theater person as well. And so first off, you mentioned a thing about Hamilton. We'll all be able to see it literally tomorrow. We're recording this on Thursday.
Yes, I am going to lose my mind, mm-hmm. my whole mind. And I've already warned my family. I was like, don't give me a hard time. I'm gonna sing. I'm gonna cry. Like, just leave me alone. Yeah. And let me experience this.
So we're in Cleveland, and we are, like, a very random fact about Cleveland is we have, outside of Broadway, we have the largest theater district in the country. Like, it's Broadway, and then we have a bigger theater district than even Chicago. Like, it's crazy.
Serious?
Yeah, so we get all of these touring shows. So our theater district is called Playhouse Square, and so we have a big group of our friends and I have season tickets. Obviously there's nothing going on now, but so we get everything that's big from like the 2 years prior when they go on the national tours, they come mm-hmm. to Cleveland. So I will say I have seen Hamilton, obviously not like with Lynn and, you know, Debbie, but I've seen it. But I'm right. I haven't seen Hadestown, which I saw that you said.
Oh, yes. I can't wait. I have so many things on my like bucket list. I have to go and see like all of these things. Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. So did you grow up loving musical theater?
I did. I was stuck on Annie and what else? Oh my gosh. And my mom took me to, this is not like her parenting choices, whatever. But she took me to see Sweeney Todd when I was very young. And I love it. But I had that experience just as a very young child, and just never, like, I never saw. I just, like, I was obsessed with Phantom of the Opera in mm-hmm. middle school. Like, and people were like, what are you doing? Like, why are you like this? But I love it. I love it.
So the first one I ever saw was Phantom, and like we took a family trip to Toronto, and it was like a really big deal, and we were gonna, like, we saw it with like the original Toronto cast, but I was like 5 or 6, and my mom will never let me forget this because I love musicals now. Like, halfway through the first act, I looked up at her as like a little 5 or 6 year old, and I was like, when are they gonna stop singing? Because like, I had no the whole thing is like, I had no concept. Do you think that, I mean, other than obviously, like, you know, we talked about Cinderella and it being a musical, but like, have you, because you also have a musical background, like, have you had any desire to like write a musical or a story where you're putting the music in there as well?
I don't think I could do it. I just, I mean, now, do I want to be in a musical? Yes. Like, mm-hmm. sign me up. Let's do that. But yeah, I don't know, but you know, look, now you got me thinking, like, maybe that could be something. Why not?
Wicked is on Broadway still.
Yeah.
There's Cinderella, there's Into the Woods. You know, you mentioned the Magic 3. Into the Woods has that in there. Listen, I'm telling you. At least something to think about. All right, so towards the end of our conversations, we always do what we call the Nerd 9, which is just 9 lighthearted questions. I used to call them rapid fire, and then I would get on tangents, and like, we would have people email me like, please stop saying rapid fire. You're lying. It's not.
Yeah.
So the first one is, what's the last book you finished reading, or what are you reading right now? I will accept either.
I just finished A Song Below Water and, by Bethany C. Morrow. And, it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite place to read?
I anywhere I can go where it's fairly quiet, which is hard when you have kids. So yeah, like in the closet when nobody's looking, like just wherever I can go to get some quiet.
Are they little ones?
They are. So my youngest is 8, but my oldest daughter is about to be 20. So, yeah, so there's a, I have 4 kids. So there's a range there.
Gotcha. That was us too. I'm the youngest of 4. It was always chaos in our house. What book, do you remember the book that kind of made you fall in love with reading?
I think it was probably, a Nancy Drew book. That is the first, like, full on kind of novel that I remember reading, and it was The Hidden Staircase. And I read every single other Nancy Drew book in existence after that. And I think I was 8 when I read that. Yeah.
Amazing. What is one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
I would love to go to New Zealand. Mm-hmm. My brother was just there over the holidays, and he was there for like a month, and he was like, I don't want to come back. And I was like, well, I gotta go check this out. So I would definitely love to go there.
Plus, I imagine of like any people, you're probably very well accustomed to long trips, like either on a plane or in a car. Like, it sounds like you're like well adapted at that.
Yeah we drove from Anchorage, where we were at, to Georgia, 8 days. Yeah. Woof. So yikes. Yeah.
Jeez,
I was like, I never want to be in a car ever again.
Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
I think New Year's is my favorite. It just feels like a fresh start, and I'm definitely going to be looking forward to New Year's this time around. So
let's throw this year in the trash.
Yeah.
Oh man. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Yeah.
Gotta have coffee.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Mm-hmm. You're in a safe space to say that. So my co-host, it has 4 cats now, and I have 2 dogs. So it's like it was a running joke, and then one time when she was traveling for work, I did a book recommendation episode by myself, and I just did dog books and didn't think anything of it. We got more emails from people being like, where are the cat books? And I was like,
how dare.
Yeah, so then she did a cat book one, and like our listeners are kind of 50-50, but like I got so much sass and she got like only support, and I was very
sad.
Do you have a favorite food?
Do I have a favorite food? I love French toast. I will eat French toast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So yeah, it's not the healthiest choice, but yeah, that's my fave.
It's delicious. Yeah. Okay, last one of these. If you could have dinner with one person alive or dead, who would you pick?
Toni Morrison.
So I, and listeners know this, I grew up in Toni Morrison's hometown of Lorain, Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Our tiny little, that's like our one, like our claim to fame. Like we hold on to it for dear life. It's like, welcome to the international city. Toni Morrison was born here. Please.
Yeah.
okay. Last question for you. What do you hope readers take away from reading Cinderella is Dead?
I hope a few things. I hope you feel seen. If you haven't had a chance to see yourself reflected in a story like this before, and you see yourself in Sophia or Constance or any of the other characters, I hope you feel seen. I hope you feel kind of held and supported by the work. And I also hope that even people who don't see themselves reflected can appreciate stories like this, and seeing other people kind of take the lead and be the heroes in their own stories, because that's important too. So I hope, you know, and it's, I think it's a fun, you know, a fun read as well. So I hope people enjoy it and see themselves and you know, take something away that's more, you know, that's more than just the story. I hope you see yourself reflected.
I think that's perfect. The book is so fun. As we talked about before I started recording, I'm sorry you don't get to do like a
yeah.
Doing everything digital, but Everyone needs to go check it out. It's so, so much fun. Early congratulations. And Caitlin, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.